Welcome to the MadTech Podcast special from ExchangeWire, a weekly deep dive into a pressing industry issue.
Hello, and welcome to this MadTech Podcast special. I'm your host, John Still, and today we're here to talk about the evolving agency landscape. Things have been shaken up in the agency world over the last few months, with Omnicom buying IPG, others like Publicis making moves by buying ad tech providers like Lotame. Most recently, RGA announced its return to independence after 23 years as part of IPG. And to discuss the tectonic shifts in the agency ecosystem, I'm joined by Ryan Wareham, Executive Client and Delivery Director at RGA. Ryan, welcome.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me on.
No, welcome. Glad to have you. So, loads to dig into. Obviously, you've been a part of this change at the moment with the latest RGA move. But first off, tell me how you're seeing the agency landscape changing and the shifts that you've been seeing recently.
So I think there's a few things. So we're definitely seeing the shift to more of a media, data, ad tech play from the holdcos. I think last week, Mark Reed was saying that WPP are placing a huge bet on Group M, and they just announced as well a big partnership with Stability that owns Stability Diffusion. So there's kind of, I mean, AI is a running theme through everything, but you can see the big companies starting to really place bets on that. And I can't remember, I read this last week, but also saw Martin Sorrell quoted as believing that he thinks Group M is worth more than all of WPP put together. So that kind of shows where the money is and where the interest is at the holdcos. And then, I think as well, just to add more strength to this, as you mentioned actually in the intro, Publicis acquiring Lotame to put that together with Epsilon. It gives them access to 4 billion customer profiles. Again, it's kind of like there's the data, the media play, and if everything is starting to move a bit more towards AI, having that data, having that structure gives quite an edge and a competitive advantage.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting trend that we've seen this year, that move towards them hoovering up the data players, and the Lotame move was really, really interesting. Where do you think this leaves, the more, I suppose, the traditional agency model, and how do you feel it's impacting that?
So I think what we're seeing in the market is, so there's this coherence around data, media, and MarTech. And then we've seen over the past 5 or 6 years quite a lot of restructuring in the holdcos and a lot of consolidation. And I think the model here is to move away from like a holding company model and more to an operating company model like an Accenture or an IBM. So that you act as a cohesive whole rather than a collection of agencies with a loosely coupled back office. I think I don't work for Publicis and I haven't, but from what we can see from the outside, they announced Marcel a long time ago now, and the Publicis Power of One, and they've obviously done a lot of heavy lifting in the background that is helping them. If you look at their financial performance and their market results, they're kind of always really up there. So I don't know necessarily what they've done in the deep, dark operational places, but it starts to be seeming to pay off in terms of their results. And I think it's also borne out a lot in the rationalization we've seen. WPP in particular over the past few years have merged a lot of agencies together and got not just a lot of cost savings, but probably a lot of operation from kind of some of the layoffs that they made. But I think a lot of operational efficiencies as well, just in terms of the way they work. So I think there's this promise now to the market of kind of integrated teams seamlessly blending creative, media, and data. I don't think it's there yet, and I think there's still quite a lot of cultural fault lines that needed to be bridged within the holdcos across the different agencies. But I think if those holdcos can get it right, it'll be quite a powerful model.
Yeah, and it's interesting how the holdco outlook has changed, as you've just mentioned. And I think the emergence of data as the new, the new lifeblood of the holdcos, it's interesting to see how it will bear fruit. And like you said, Publicis, it's whatever moves have been made, it's starting to kind of shape now, and we're seeing what Publicis really looks like again. Do you think, where does that leave the smaller agencies that were inside the holdco model? And, are we looking at some quite intense streamlining here? Is it going to be, are we going to see a lot more divestment as we have over the past year or so?
I think so. I think it's really interesting. I think the rise of the independence is a good thing. And I think a good thing for the industry and then a good thing for our clients. Because I think the independents have got much more flexibility and freedom to innovate at pace and really push things forward and push the boundary. And I think the more competition in that space and in the industry, the better. Because I think it means we're all pushing each other to move the needle forwards, which compounds on a whole industry perspective in terms of the value that the industry can generate and put into the world and generate for clients. So yeah, I think that's a good thing. And then I think the thing we've not seen yet, because I don't quite think the tech's there, but I think probably in the next 24 months, the real disruptors and challenges, and this is potentially where, this is where RGA are looking to play, but I think you can have some ground up agencies that build that are kind of agentic or AI first. And I think they're the ones that, you know, everybody's worried about the hold calls or maybe some of the bigger independents, but I'd warn against taking your eye off the these startups that will move quickly and really innovate and really innovate at pace.
Yeah, I want to pick up on the AI discussion because it's you know, it's impacting everything in across the ad tech, across the media landscape as well. And fascinating at how quickly it's moving as well. How have you seen AI impact, you know, your workplace so far? I had one of your colleagues on about a year and a half ago when ChatGPT was just kicking off, and he had some great advice at the time when he was saying that basically at that time it was, for creatives especially, a good way to learn what not to do. Basically, they would ask it about a client brief and it would spit them back all the cliches the ad industry has ever chucked out. And they learned that was how to use it. It will give you back what it's learned. But I think we've seen so many advancements and it's becoming a far more fundamental play now across the board. So how have you seen that that shift happen?
Yeah, so I think in our industry, I think there's two real lenses to look at it through. So one is the most obvious one, which is efficiency, which I think when you talk about AI in business and across industry, not just in the marketing industry, that's been the most prevalent use case and the most obvious one. And yeah, like you said, the tools have got much better. It's impossible at the moment to keep track of. There's like 20 new great tools that come out each week. So yeah, I think we've had this probably maybe the past 18 months or the second half of 2023, most of 2024, it's been like this assistant model, and how can you use tools like Midjourney within your workflow to speed you up a little bit. And then I'll come on to creativity in a minute, but I think now it's shifting to more agentic. So you go from having an assistant that helps you with one specific task along your workflow to you have an agent where you can brief it and delegate work to, and it can do a bit of work for you and come back. And now I think we're starting to see, I guess, what you'd call vertical integration. So these agents where you train it on your knowledge and your proprietary data, which it really for me is the IP, and that's where the magic is. I think I've had this hypothesis that in any business, if the AI could track the top 2% of performers working over a month, and then you could bottle that and train the LLM on it, then you've got like the top 2% performance of any business scaled infinitely. Which I don't, the tech isn't there to do that, but I think like that's
the theories in place. Yeah, yeah.
That's the unlock. So now I think we're starting to see the tools are better, they're easier to use. And you're getting more agentic workflows. So I think more and more we'll be able to give the AI goals and delegate to it, and it'll be able to perform tasks on our behalf. Still not without humans. You know, you need to set it the goal. They still hallucinate. They're not perfect. And there's still a lot of curation in the outputs. I mean, even with Google VO2, the output it can create is fantastic. And we're lucky enough that Google are like one of our largest clients, so we've got early access. But even with tools like VO2, there's still a good bit of post-production required to get it where it needs to be. And I think the art is as well, well, I come into this creativity. So I think you've got the improvement in efficiency. I think the improvement in effectiveness in what we do in creativity is kind of in two ways. I think one, you've got tools that you can use as a creative partner. You know, they can help shortcut brainstorm. You can have expert panels, et cetera, et cetera. But I think really the magic in it, and especially for the more smaller independents that can move a bit quicker and get access to it, is there's a whole paradigm shift over the next, probably the next 24 months, where I've been thinking of AI more as like a new material to design with. And I think that's where the magic's going to be. And I think that's where the white space is, and that's definitely where RGA are looking to play. And I mean, this whole, what it enables as people acting in the world, I'd say consumers, but you know, anything we interact with, is these real hyper-personalized experiences or touch points. And I think the whole digital revolution brought us convenience, but took away that personal touch. You know, you used to go in your local bank, the branch manager would know you, your family, your financial situation, and be able to give you really tailored advice. Whereas, you know, the inconvenience was you had to go find that branch. You could only go when it was open. Whereas the internet brought 24/7, but it just digitized a lot of analog processes. It didn't necessarily really revolutionize them and make, so it got very convenient. Whereas I think this will make everything convenient and hyper-personal, which creates a real conundrum for brands, because then where does your brand live if everybody has a hyper-personalized, tailored experience, probably delivered to them by their AI chief of staff, which kind of manages all their mundane tasks?
Yeah, I mean, it's so much fascinating stuff in there that's so interesting in terms of like where we're going to take this in the industry. I am glad that you mentioned the human need here, that, you know, we're not looking to entirely replace creativity, and that people are still needed to input. And, you know, you're always going to need your staff. You're always going to need creatives. I was at a conference a few weeks ago, and Pete Markey from Boots was giving a keynote on being a CMO and the challenges. And he'd said that he asked ChatGPT or one of the AIs to make him a marketing plan. And he admitted, he said, like, it was 80% there in terms of what I would have done, but there is that 20% that it couldn't get. And like you said, hallucinations occur. I mean, I asked, I did a test on ChatGPT the other week, because it struggles with strawberries. So I asked, it doesn't understand strawberries. It can't work out how many R's are in strawberries, the word. But also, I asked it to draw me a picture of a room without any strawberries. And so it gave me this picture of a room filled with strawberries. And it was like, here's your room, not a strawberry in sight. So it just, there's things it doesn't understand. But I find it fascinating. And I am pleased that you've mentioned that, you know, there's still that human element to the creative industries and to creativity.
I think there is. And I think even the more advanced the tools get, there's still going to be, you're still really going to need a lot of human creativity and ingenuity. But I think the skill set probably shifts over the next 5 years. And I think that art is really going to be, because if you think about how these things are composed, the large language model itself is, I think, going to become commoditized. So it's going to kind of be, you know, OpenAI, Anthropic, Google, you know, you've got Claude, you've got Gemini. I think those models will kind of level out. And then I think where the real ingenuity is what you build on top of that and kind of the prompt chains that you construct. So yeah, you train the model on your proprietary data, great. It can use all that information and that experience, but then leveraging that in a way that creates unique experiences or unique content is still gonna require that human intervention. But I think that comes then in how you construct a prompt, and you know, creatives are very good lateral thinkers. And I think that is where the really good creatives will shine over the next 5 years. That's how they use the tools to make their craft better.
That's it. And that's, I agree with that. And I very much believe that it's not a replacement. It is a new tool for creativity. It can aid with research. Like the agentic stuff's really interesting in terms of building into workflows, how we manage our tasks. But, you know, I will still need a team of writers. Like, news publishers will still need their writers. Creatives will still be needed across agencies. Like, it is more than ever, like, a tool at our disposal that we need to remember that. And, you know, hopefully businesses remember that as well when they're working out headcount. But no, it will change a lot. And you touched on it a little bit in terms of the flexibility and efficiency that we'll offer independent agencies in particular, outside of Holco models and how quickly they can do things. Is it going to be a source of strength for independent agencies? And then further to that, like, tell us a little bit about the RGA move to independence and how and what's up next for you guys.
I think it'll be a strength in as for the independents only in as much as they can, they have that freedom to innovate a bit faster than the bigger organizations. As we were just discussing, I think if the independents can attract the best talent, then the best talent will make the best use of the tools. And that's always going to be the unlock. Everything's still a people business at the end of the day. So you need to get the right talent. But, you know, I think the nature of the independents can attract some of the best creative talent. So I think there's that. I think RG in particular. So I guess what makes us a bit different in this space is we're newly independent. We've got this... we've worked with Fortune 250 companies for like the past 48 years, if you go back all the way. But I'd say really since 1990, when Bob made the shift to digital and that really picked up. We've always helped them with some of their toughest growth problems using the latest technology and creativity to solve these in quite novel ways. And I think that's what we're really going to tap into now, kind of in this new epoch, is really tap into our heritage and our DNA to really push the boundaries of creativity. I think like Tiff, our chief creative officer, said it, if we just used AI for efficiency, it'd be a massive waste of what it's capable of. So I think for us, it's like we've got the heritage of like innovating and using technology really quickly. We know how to work with big organizations and help them have an impact on their growth. And I think for us, you know, the focus is really on creating valuable brand experiences for the clients, whether that's digital products, whether it's communications, whether it's how the brand is expressed. And I think, you know, we're looking to do this really across three ways, kind of the consulting part up front, because I think we're right on the precipice of like a now next. There's like a lot of now problems that still need solving, but people are starting to bleed into the next. It's only last week I was speaking to one of our clients and they were saying, you know, even if your SEO is great on organic search, you're still eighth on the Google list when you put in the Gemini summary, Google Shopping, the paid media ads at the top of it. And then they're like, you know, and once you've used Perplexity and got used to it, going back to something like Google kind of feels a bit like using a child's toy, having played with an adult console. So I think there's that. So, you know, there's an area of us to consult around there. And then I think once you've found that next step for the client, and it'll be different for different clients because I think they're at different stages on the journey, then it's how do we use all of our collective experience across interfaces, across content creation, to then help them show up well in this new space. You know, so saying like, where does your brand live and how does it show up in a world that could be agent first is a real challenge that no one's really cracked yet or thought of, probably because it's 24 months away. But, you know, the technology is evolving exponentially. It's gone from quarterly releases to almost weekly releases. And now there's a bit of a race between the Chinese tech and the US tech as well, which makes things move even faster. And then I guess the final bit that we have talked about is, you know, we can help find out where the white space is. We can help create interfaces and content to capitalize on that in the new paradigm. But also, you know, there's a lot of supporting clients with being more efficient and leveraging AI, you know, to create content or build web applications, for example, in such a way that they're set up for a more generative interface in the future. So that's what it means for us at the moment. It's exciting times. It's like having been through the start of the digital wave when I started my career and things shifting to digital, and then been through the mobile revolution and then been through social, it kind of feels like the fourth time around for me, but it's just as exciting as it was the first three.
Good. Well, yeah. I mean, you've seen it all. That's
showing my age.
You've been through the whole media history. Well, I was going to finish by asking provocative question: is the whole co-era dead? But I think we've fairly much established that it's not. It's just adapting. Would you say it's changing? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, like I said, I definitely think it's changing. I think they're coherent around media data and MarTech. I think there are a volume of large organizations. They're small in number, but large in serviceable, addressable market. And I think that is where the holdcos go. And the big advantage they've got is that they've got the access to the prime media stock, and that's always going to be the hook for the big brands. And then they've got the data, and then the creativity kind of, unfortunately, feels like it comes third now in that model.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And like you say, that won't change for the time being, at least where the quality, you know, where the stock is. But well, that was a cracking chat, Ryan. Thank you so much for joining me on the show. Really appreciate it, and best of luck with RGA and the newfound independence.
Great stuff. Thanks for having me. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you very much, mate. And thank you all very much for listening. We'll see you next time on the MadTech Podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to this MadTech Podcast special. We'll be back to discuss another hot industry topic soon.